Started. I will call to order the Finance Committee of Monday, April 7th, 2025, and ask Dave to please call the roll.
Council President Figueroa Cole.
Here.
Alder Revere.
Here.
Alder Curry.
Here.
Alder Madison.
Here.
Alder Evers.
Here.
Alder Rummel.
Present.
Mayor of Quorum.
Thank you. We have no public comment today, so are there any disclosures or recusals on today's agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on then to the consent agenda. Item 13 is a staff update, so we will separate that from the consent agenda. Are there other items that members of the body wish to have excluded from the consent agenda at this time? Seeing none, then can I get a motion on the consent agenda, which is items 2 through 12, please?
Move to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt items 2 through 12 and the recommendations therein. Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor? Seeing no objection, we'll record that vote and proceed directly to item 13, which is Legistar 86892, an update on federal executive orders and directives to pause federal grants and loans. I believe this is a tag team effort, but Dave, are we starting with you?
Yep, I'll share the PowerPoint, and yes, it is a tag team effort. Can everyone see that? Sounds like we're good. All right, thank you. Yes, this is our second or third update on this issue, and we'll follow the same format as before. And a legal update first, some background on what's happening with the federal budget, as well as federal economic policy, and then a highlight on some of the programs within planning, community, and economic development, which will be brought to you by Matt Wachter. So moving to the legal updates, I think Mike Haas is in the meeting. I don't know if he has much to share, but Mike?
He was here.
He was in the meeting.
Oh, Mike, you're on mute if you're speaking to us.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Apologize, struggling with Zoom audio, and now I cannot even get down to the to put myself on video, so you won't have to see me. There is not much to report on the legal front. The injunctions that we reported on earlier are still in place, ordering that the administration not withhold funding based upon the executive orders issued by the president. Some of those court decisions said that funding could be withheld if there was other justification for that in the applicable governing statutes. There are some grants that are still being withheld, even though injunctions are in place, and we're trying to monitor those and get to the bottom of it. We don't have any new court decisions that would impact the federal funding.
Maybe do questions as we go. Any questions for Attorney Haas? Seeing none. Oh, Alder Evers.
Thanks, Mayor. I know that there have been lawsuits issued by various states' attorney generals I don't know if I'm saying that right, state's attorney general, I guess is the correct way of saying it, including our attorney general, who happens to be a District 13 resident, by the way. Do they have any bearing on the city right now in terms of our budget, as far as you know?
Well, Dave can help answer that, but my understanding is that potentially they could, because some of the funding flows through the state to us. I think you're muted, Alder.
No, that's okay. That's pretty much it. Just wondering how that worked out, and Dave can address it when it gets to more of the financial side of things. But I'm assuming that some of what is being contested would filter down to the municipal level, the local level. So thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Any other questions for Attorney Haas? If not, then we'll go on.
All right. Okay, we'll talk about finance-related matters. First, we did get some questions about the continuing resolution that Congress adopted back in mid-March. It basically maintains appropriations that were adopted for federal fiscal year 2024, which would have been the fiscal year that ended on September 30th of 2024, with some modifications to address higher costs, workload, policy goals. Those modifications are listed here with the sort of blue numbers being increases and the red being some decreases. Overall, and you can see the areas, the supplemental nutrition through the WIC program, housing support, they kind of maintain Medicaid, foster care, and child support sort of programs through the first quarter of federal fiscal year 26, additional funding for defense, basically costs of salaries and benefits and so on, and then additional funding for basically immigration control. The federal deficit, based on this continuing resolution, would increase by about $7 billion over the next 10 years. That's really a combination of the spending reductions and some rescissions to the IRS for tax enforcement, which is expected to reduce revenues over the 10 years. So the net of all that's about a $7 billion increase in the deficit. So $7 billion is a big number to us, but it's relatively small in the world of the federal budget. The big work that's going on now in Congress is for the federal fiscal year 26 budget. And there are now competing resolutions between the House and the Senate. They need to adopt resolutions, a joint resolution to give instructions to appropriation committees in both houses. The key issue is the 10-year cost of extending the 2017 tax cuts. And the cost of that over 10 years is estimated to be about $4 trillion. The House approach, which they passed in a resolution, was $2 trillion in cuts, which included Medicaid, and up to $3.3 trillion increase in the deficit and an increase in the debt limit to sort of pay for that, in effect, by about $4 trillion. The Senate approach is to do a sort of creative calculation of the deficit to exclude the tax cut extension, and in the end, resulting in a much higher deficit than the House of about $5.7 trillion and a higher increase in the debt limit. And you're probably seeing in the press, the media, the House and the Senate are trying to work through their differences so that they get to a joint resolution. That joint resolution then allows them to move to a budget reconciliation process, which allows the budget to basically be adopted in the Senate through a simple majority rather than a 60-vote requirement. The other issue is that if this all isn't kind of worked out over the next few months, the U.S. may reach its debt limit in August or September, which could lead to a default on the nation's debt. Some comparisons. This is from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget to try to put into context what both the House and the Senate are looking at in terms of increases in the on the left-hand side, the federal debt. The bottom two bars are the House and the Senate increases to the federal debt. The four bars above that are the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which was the tax cuts in 2017, the CARES Act in 2020, the ARPA in 2021, and then the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law in 2021 as well. And the point of this graph is you add up all those four bars, and that's what the Senate is contemplating is even larger increase in the federal deficit than those four laws put together, which ARPA in particular was a pretty significant increase in federal spending. The right-hand side is just putting these increases basically in the budget or the deficit in the context of some other programs, such as the Affordable Care Act, premium tax credits, Medicare Part D, Social Security disability provisions, mandatory veteran spending, and mandatory income security programs. So again, major sort of welfare expansions have less of an impact on the federal budget than what the Senate and even the House to some extent are contemplating in terms of increases in the federal deficit. Turning to an update on federal grants, the Health and Human Services moved to cut CDC grants, saying that the COVID emergency is over, $11 billion. Alder Evers, this is a good example of action by the state's attorneys general to block that through court order. That would affect public health in Madison and Dane County. They do get an immunization grant that was going to be in place through June 30th of this year, and through action by the federal government that was canceled as of March 24th. And it currently funds about four project positions. So we're kind of in limbo at the moment on that one. We just received word today that FEMA issued some communications to end a Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities grant. Stormwater had received a $6 million grant for a flood mitigation project. The public works contract had already been awarded, and we've sent out less than $1 million on that to be reimbursed. So that is a very new situation and one that still is yet to be defined. The community change grants we've talked about, those remain suspended as far as we know. $20 million grant for the energy efficiency improvements. And then some more recent things is the dismantling of the Institute for Museum and Library Sciences, or Services, sorry, which serves about, many museums and libraries across the country, as well as National Endowment for Humanities canceling previously awarded grants. The city does not have grants from either of those, but in particular with the Institute for Museum and Library Services benefits indirectly from funds provided to the state of Wisconsin and the library services provided at that level for local libraries. Just a very quick overview, and I will admit up front, I'm not an expert on tariffs by any stretch. So this is more of a summary of what's out there at the moment, but reciprocal tariffs were announced last week based on basically a calculation of the bilateral trade deficit with certain countries. So mainly what's our trade deficit based on exports versus imports. It wasn't based on tariffs in other countries or monetary policy or value-added taxes or other policy goals, although those are stated as some of the goals with this action. The Tax Foundation estimates a $3.1 trillion impact from the tariffs over the next 10 years, and they estimate that would be about a $2,100 tax increase per household just this year alone. The Federal Reserve chair came out and talked about the risk of higher inflation and higher unemployment, which is also known as stagflation. And then Wisconsin is heavily exposed in the tariff arena because of our concentration in agricultural product production and manufacturing, with about 15 to 20% of the state's GDP from those sectors. And that puts us among the top 10 nationally. That source is the Tax Policy Center. So a little bit of background on tariffs. Obviously, the stock market and other markets have been fluctuating quite a bit over the last few days. How that translates into, for example, prices for us to construct certain things in the city or purchase vehicles is, I think, yet to be determined. But clearly, a higher degree of risk with all of that, with what's happening. All right, that sort of ends the finance and budget portion of the presentation. And unless there's any questions, we can move on.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions for Dave before we dig into PCED? Alder Evers?
Yeah, thanks, Mayor. Director Schmidtke, I wonder if you could speak to the prime rate, the interest rate set by the Fed, and wondering if what we budgeted, what we planned on, how it's matching up with the reality. And I realize that the Federal Reserve Chairman is unclear as to what's going to happen and whether there's pressure to bring interest rates down. They may, in fact, stay the same or could even go up potentially if inflation takes off again. How does that have, what bearing does that have on our investments? And we had a bit of a windfall in this past year. Do we anticipate a potential windfall moving forward, or are things about where we anticipated?
That's really hard to say right now, Alder Evers. We've been trying to predict interest rates over the last roughly, 30 months or so, and have had a hard time identifying that, just given both on the front end of all of this, the rapid, really the fastest rise in interest rates in decades. And, that did translate into, as you said, a windfall, more investment income for the city. And now it's a question of what's the duration of that going to be. We have assumed 25 budget, continued higher investment income compared to what we had budgeted in prior years, but probably less than what we're going to take in or we did take in 2024. So that could change. Mm-hmm. Now, if what's happening right now results in a recession in some way, shape, or form, results in layoffs in certain sectors, that could result in a reduction in interest rates and a reduction in investment income. The other thing that could happen is sort of a flight to quality from the stock market to the bond market, which could further depress yields and basically the interest rate and what our investment income is. So it's really hard to know right now. We have clearly lifted the amount that we forecast or what we've included in the budget from investment income from what we had before budgeted. But where we are relative to that, I think, it's even a bigger question mark than it has been over the past 30 months. So we'll just continue to monitor what's happening there. But it's a great question and one we're just not sure on. Mm-hmm. Clearly, in the short term, the Federal Reserve Chair is saying interest rates are going to hold steady because inflation remains a risk. And how the Fed will navigate through a time of, as I said, stagflation with both high unemployment and high inflation is difficult to say right now.
Well, you mentioned the possibility of a recession, which is a follow-up question I have. I wonder, I'm not sure if you were in your current position back at the during the time of the Great Recession, but I wonder if you could speak to the role that our rainy day fund, our fund balance, and how it may be fortuitous that we have a large fund balance if we do move into a severe recession, and how that plays out. And I'm quite frankly not clear as to how a fund balance is used by a city during a severe recession. Maybe you could speak to that.
Yeah, I think, again, a good question in terms of the impact and how we might use our reserves. You know, when we look at, for example, the property tax, it's relatively stable, you know, in times of downturns in the economy, not as volatile as, say, a sales tax or an income tax is. So that, you know, given the fact that we're so reliant on property tax, that does help keep our revenue base relatively solid. Where we might see revenue reductions would be in things like building permits. That's what we saw during the Great Recession. We also saw drops in room tax collections. And then at those points, the fund balance, the rainy day fund, kind of serves as a shock absorber. So as we might take in less revenue, we're able to support the level of expenditures by basically that reserve gets drawn down. But so, yes, it's a good situation we're in to have the reserves that we do. And then plus the fact that in the five-year plan that the council adopted back in November, we do plan on spending down those reserves as well to help maintain current service levels based on projections that were made, you know, clearly several months ago, and we'll continue to update those estimates going forward. So that's what happened, you know, in the Great Recession of, what will we say, 15, 16, 17 years ago. So.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's all.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Alder. Alder Rummel?
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Director Schmidtke. You talked about the what you learned today from FEMA. What I write down is that we some of our grants for stormwater were canceled, but it sounds like we've spent some money. So are we liable? What happens next given that situation?
Alder, that's an excellent question. Those are questions we all have at the moment. This was just passed along to the city in the last couple of days. We don't have those answers yet. We don't even know to what extent what came from FEMA might actually be the case. We don't know to what extent there might be legal challenges to it and things like that. So that's a great question. We just don't have the answers at the moment, nor do we know the interaction with the public works contract that's already been, in effect, put into place for this project. So we've been reimbursed for costs up till now. How much other costs are out there and what we can actually fund is yet to be determined.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Alder Verveer?
Thank you very much, Mayor. And thank you, Dave, for the presentation. I have a follow-up question to Alder Rummel's question about the FEMA grant news. And I see that our city engineer is here, so I wanted to ask Jim if he could be a little more specific as to what flood mitigation project this is. I know in Dave's presentation it said project singular. I don't know if it's one large project, Jim, or several. If you could maybe answer that question first, please.
Yeah, I can answer that, Alder Prevere. It is one single project. It's our Pheasant Branch Flood Mitigation Project. It's along the old Sauk Trails Business Park on the west side. And it's roughly a $8 to $9 million public works contract, and we're anticipating about $6.5 million in BRIC grant funding for that.
And it's what's the schedule, the timeline for it? Obviously, we've already expended.
It is actively being constructed right now. They've completed a lot of the greenway grading and pond work, and they were beginning the street culvert replacements starting this week, with hoping to finish up construction in early spring next year. They're maybe even seeming a bit ahead of schedule, but I always hesitate to say that.
Out of curiosity, Jim, who is our contractor?
It is RG Houston is the contractor on that one.
Mm-hmm. Cottage Grove.
Yep.
And so, and obviously, Dave has now mentioned more than once that this is very much new information, so we don't know exactly what will happen, including potential litigation. But at this point, there's no thought, this very early stage, that we would slow down the work or even stop the work. Is that right?
That is our thinking right now. We are taking a look at other projects and things that we did have in our flood mitigation program to see if this is something that we would maybe have to delay other projects or things to help fund the remaining portion of this project locally out of the stormwater utility. But there's just so much unknown still at this point in time.
Thank you. You anticipated my next question. So thanks for answering that. Thanks for your responsiveness. And then, Mayor, if I could I ask our public health director a question or two about the CDC grant? I see Janelle is here.
Yeah, Alder, if I could just see, I think maybe Alder Evers had a question about the stormwater well. Is that right, Alder?
I'm happy.
And then we'll come back to you.
Thank you.
Alder Evers?
Yeah, thanks, Mayor. And this for either Dave or Jim. Are any of the other stormwater projects imperiled by this change in the FEMA, you know, this potentially clawing back some of it? In other words, were any of our other stormwater projects funded through this same grant mechanism, FEMA, or a similar one?
No, this is the only one. But like I mentioned, there could be impacts to other planned projects or something, depending upon if we have to shift more stormwater utility only funds into this particular project.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Alder Revere?
Thanks again, Mayor. And thanks, Janelle, for being here. I wanted to take advantage of your attendance by asking a couple of follow-up questions about the CDC immunization grant news that Dave shared with us. Admittedly, obviously, as Dave shared, currently that grant cancellation is apparently blocked by court order, and it goes without saying we hope that that's permanent. But assuming it isn't, could you speak to what the current thinking is amongst your management team and public health as to how to move forward?
Sure. I apologize. I'm going to stay off camera. I'm working in one of our different offices this afternoon, and the camera is being a little finicky, if you don't mind. So I will do my best. That grant was for $1.8 million. It was a supplemental immunization grant that was funded post-pandemic, in quotes, I put the post, to support doing some a deeper dive and more outreach into community around access and beliefs around vaccination. So it was intended to end on June 30th, and we did submit the final, in quotes, bill to DHS that they requested by their deadline of April 4th of last Friday. At the end of that, we had about $385,000 left unspent of that $1.8 million. And it did result in us having to provide notices to three of the four project individuals funded by this grant. There were some other funding streams available for one of the individuals. So it is tied up in the court, in the TRO. I've had a number of conversations and messages with state health staff. They've provided no different information to us around our ability to resume any activities or start billing again. They are in a waiting and trying to figure that out. So we did make that decision because we do are obligated and appropriately so to support folks with a 30-day notice of termination. So their effective end dates would be May 2nd.
Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Janelle. Were you?
No, I hope that kind of covers all of what you were thinking. Happy to take more questions.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks, Janelle. Obviously, a very unpleasant situation, to say the least, especially for the directly impacted colleagues of yours. Absolutely. So are the four FTE positions that were funded by this CDC grant all LTEs technically, or are they permanent?
They were project positions, so they were afforded full benefits as a Dane County employee, but their employment was tied to the condition of the grant, the grant cycle.
I understand, including the one where you were able to optimistically find funding to keep them.
Correct. Yes. Yes. And that was due to a vacancy in a different program while we're in a hiring transition to be able to provide some salary saving support to one person.
And is the public health fund balance at this point healthy, would you say? It's, as you might recall, a question I often ask you.
Yes, yeah, thank you for that question. I would say yes, we have an incredibly healthy fund balance, and we have been trying to build it in anticipation of a variety of different scenarios that might result in the need for that. This is not one of those, but glad that we have it right now. I think we're sitting at around $10
million. Yes.
Anticipate that that will be a little bit higher by the end of this year.
I've always been impressed with your fund balance, robustness, I'll say, in your conservative budgeting, and obviously it's times like this where it would come in handy. But if unfortunately the courts ultimately allow the grant to be canceled, you don't foresee utilizing fund balance or other resources for those other three FTEs that you
We had always anticipated that those positions would end effective the end of this grant. As we've talked about in the past, Alder, we do have intentions and have presented the request to use fund balance for some other positions within the department that were tied to a more broad, and I would say ongoing areas of work within the department that weren't so specific to a particular grant. And so we are planning on presenting a similar proposal in this year's budget as well.
Thank you. Yeah, and then just lastly, could you explain a little more how, if with the grant cancellation, and appreciate that it was wrapping up in any event, but what impact you would say that this has on the health of county residents? In other words, as much of the work that was being done able to continue with your current permanent staff in terms of immunizations being effective?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I think we're still trying to figure that out, exactly what that we have learned can be incorporated into the work of our regular immunization program. This was allowing us to do some additional kind of deep diving and community engagement around vaccine hesitancy and messaging within our local community. So I think that we're going to try to get the the findings of that or what's been done to date. As you, we've said, it was intended to finish in June to be able to see what we can incorporate. I would say the bigger challenge that we may face coming forward, and I know that this is maybe a little bit more than what you asked, Alder, is just the general concern we have about access to immunization funding outside of this grant, where that is something that we believe is far less secure than we've had, whether that's the amount of vaccine for adults. That supply was already, I would say, withering at the state before the change in administration. We have concerns that the vaccine for children's program is at risk, which allows for not just us, but mostly our healthcare partners in Dane County to have access to vaccines for those who are under, who don't have other opportunities to achieve it, for whether it's for income or for insurance. So I think there's some bigger questions we have around many of our programs, but immunizations is one of those that we are paying careful attention to.
Very appropriately so. Obviously very scary times with the unfortunate actions being taken at the federal level in this area in particular. So thanks very much, Janelle. I appreciate your responsiveness. Thanks for being here again. Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks for the questions.
Thank you, Alder. Any other questions on the overview before we go to PCED? Seeing none, Matt?
What?
Okay. So I'm just going to give just a highlight of where federal funds come into PCED and just a general overview of sort of how they're changing or possibly at risk. So Dave, you want to advance? So this is looking at our 2025 budget for the department. If we would have gone back to 24, 23, 2022, this would look a lot different when we had huge amounts of federal funds coming primarily into Community Development Division. So that has dropped dramatically as ARPA funds have sort of worked their way out. There's still a little bit in there that we tried to sort of take out of kind of one-time money to give a more accurate view as to how dependent we are on federal funds. You can see it's really... CDA is the by far the most heavily reliant on federal funds just because of the programs they run, but community development and planning have some as well. So big picture, it's roughly, yeah, a third of the money that comes through our department on the operating side are federal funds. So Dave, you want to advance? On the capital side, you don't see the federal funds in our capital budgets as much. And that's partially because for things like the Affordable Housing Fund, we're putting out city dollars into someone else's project, and then their project is bringing in the federal funds through the tax credits. CDA is similar, where the LLC that we create to build affordable housing, they're receiving the federal funds. So a lot of that money doesn't actually flow through the city budgets. Instead, it's our money is working with those federal programs kind of outside of the city budget. So here, where you do see it on the community development side, these are primarily loans for things like down payment assistance. So some of these are falling, again, in the capital side, but most of the money is going through the operating side. So if you want to advance, Dave. So like I said, CDA is the big one, where 75% of our operating funds are coming in. And a lot of that are the Section 8 vouchers, the Housing Choice vouchers, where large amounts of money come in. We use a little bit to pay for staff, but the bulk of it just goes right back out and helps to pay for people's rent. On the public housing side, we do bring in rent But again, a lot of the cost to staff the buildings, maintain the buildings, and fill the operating gap is through the public housing program. So CDA is highly reliant on these federal funds. In the past, when there's been a government shutdown, some of these programs are at risk, and the city has fronted money until the government opens back up. We've also seen a long-term decline in sort of support for the public housing program. Section 8 in general has been fully funded. So one of the things that long before we started talking about what's happening in Washington now, we've been encouraged by HUD to move things from public housing over to the Housing Choice Voucher Program. So we are, as we redevelop buildings, we are taking them out of the public housing program and moving them over to the Housing Voucher Program, which is a more stable funding source historically. Next slide. So Community Development Division, again, when you sort of get, when you take out the ARPA money, the one-time money, some of the pass-through things, what you're left with is about a quarter of the operating budget is federally funded. So CDBG, HOME, handful, ESG, handful of programs, each, bringing in, not much more than $1 million, adding up to $5 million. And then, like I said, on the capital side, about $1 million going out primarily as loans. So it's really city funds make up the bulk of what's happening in CDD. And then also when they put money out for projects, it's in the form of a loan. So some of that money then comes back in and is recycled. So it's a little difficult to sort of tease out exactly where all of the federal money that could be at risk is. In the past, what we have seen is some of these programs have been at risk. So during the Obama administration, it was common practice for congressional Republicans to zero out, say, the HOME program, and then it would be negotiated back in during sequestration, where we saw just across-the-board cuts. These programs have taken hits. And in general, things like CDBG and HOME, they've not been growing over the long run. They don't keep up with inflation or growth of the city. So they have sort of proportionally become, the federal money has become a smaller and smaller part of the work done in CDD. And on the capital side, it's really city funds through the Affordable Housing Fund that make up, again, the vast majority of the city's capital spending in these areas. Next slide. The Planning Division does have federal funds, and that's entirely through the MPO. So the MPO does regional transportation planning and is responsible for federal dollars related to multimodal infrastructure. And so a good chunk of their operating budget is federal because they're federally mandated to do a lot of this work. Next slide. And then CDA redevelopment. Again, a lot of this money doesn't come through the city's budget. But for example, the first phase of the Triangle, B1, 64% of that budget to build the building is federal in some way. The vast majority of it is the Section 42 tax credit. So it's a federal tax credit that passes through the state, comes to the project, and we sell it. In general, Section 42 tax credits have broad bipartisan support. There's not a lot of talk about changes of any way to the Section 42 tax credit program. The Section 48 and Section 45 tax credits, those are related to energy efficiency. So it would take major changes to the tax code to get rid of those. But in a project like Triangle B1, you know, we're talking about $5 million or so of the budget is coming from those sources, and they're paying for things like the geothermal heat pumps that will provide heating and cooling to the building. So it's possible that those could go away in future versions. For Triangle B1, they'll be there when we close in the next month or so. The Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. So this is between $6 and $7 million that we had been awarded, and this is money that then the EPA tried to claw back from the banks, from the nonprofits. So this is tied up in court. So we will not be able to get the $6 to $7 million at the time of closing. So we are relying on other sources to fill that gap until the court cases are settled on the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. So that would have been just a low-cost loan into the project. So it's not stopping the project from happening, but it's going to make it harder for us to make future phases pencil out, especially if we want to do all-electric, geothermal, sort of, you know, very green buildings. Things like the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, until it's sorted out, we just won't be able to rely on that as a funding source. And then we have the one-time sources of home and ERA, which were awarded to the city. Those we have in hand. Those will be spent on Triangle B1, but you know, they might not. ERA will not be there for future phases of the Triangle. Home funds, again, we can't necessarily rely on them being there for future phases. So when we talk about the rest of the Triangle, when we talk about Park Badger, our future-looking financial models are really not expecting much for federal sources beyond the Section 42 tax credit and likely the Section 48 and 45L. So we will continue to very closely monitor what happens with those. But even if those programs stay in place, their efficacy is affected very much by what's happening in the tax code. So if corporate taxes are reduced, there will be less demand for people to buy these tax credits, and it affects the pricing. So we've already seen the pricing go down a couple cents on the dollar since the beginning of the year, in just the fact that there could be tax reduction happening. It also, if there's a recession, so during the Great Recession, we saw prices on these tax credits drop dramatically, because if you don't have corporate profits, you don't need tax credits to offset your tax obligations. So when that happened in 2007, tax credit deals that were sort of in process, HUD made some money available to help fill gaps, but that did cause large disruptions to the tax credit program. So again, we have to watch what happens on that front to see what will happen to tax credit pricing in the credit markets. And that is all I have.
I would say thank you, Matt, but thank you for sharing how bleak things are. questions for Matt? Alder Evers.
Thanks, Mary. Yeah, I agree that prospects are somewhat dim, or potentially so anyways. One thing you didn't mention was how that the tariffs could impact the cost of construction and other policies of the administration regarding the labor force in terms of mass deportations. I'm sure we're already familiar with this or about, you know, regarding this, but maybe you could share what, you know, anything that staff has been discussing or thinking regarding this.
Yep. Issue. So we've been in close conversation with the contractors that we have in place for the Triangle and Park Badger to try to look at other building technologies we could take advantage of that are more domestic in nature. And it's hard to get a clear picture on that, because if we say make the shift to just guarantee that we're going to be able to use domestic lumber that would not be subject to the tariffs, it's the tariff still affects that price because everyone is doing the same thing, going after the domestic product. So no one has a crystal ball to kind of sort of say, except for, you know, in these commodities, the tariffs will kind of ripple through all of the pricing in it. So as we sort of go through this, we'll be making strategic decisions to see, you know, is it going to make more sense to switch from, say, you know, wood to steel or things like that to try to take it to sort of mitigate those costs as much as possible. You know, the other thing that happens is, again, if we have these sort of big shocks to the system and there's just, say, interruptions in supply chain, that affects timing as much as it affects prices. So we just need to be aware that, again, there's certain equipment that can only comes from China. And you know, if we have a large cost increase or it's difficult to get it, it's going to affect, you know, not just how much the building costs, but when we can open the building up and deliver it. So I don't have any great insights. We'll continue to talk to our contractors to do what we can. And then when we talk about future phases, you know, we'll continue to model these things. And, you know, if gaps open up, we'll look for ways to fill it. It's also always possible that we'll have to delay projects in the future if things, I guess, get too bad. As far as the effect on labor, so far we haven't heard from our contractors that we have that there's going to be a particular problem. But I guess it is still early to see how changes in labor will ripple through pricing and again timing. Not a satisfying answer, I'm sure.
No, but it's helpful, and I appreciate that you and the rest of your staff are in touch with our contractors and developers. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Any other questions for Matt? If not, thank you, Matt, and thank you, Dave and Mike. Dave, anything else on this item?
I think we've covered it, Mayor.
All right. That's the end of our agenda then, so I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Adjourn.
There a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adjourn. Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor? Seeing no objection, we will record a unanimous vote in favor, and we stand adjourned. Have a good evening, everyone.